science fiction and technology are just inextricably linked. I mean, nerds read science fiction, nerds become engineers and inventors and stuff, and it's all connected.
Welcome to List Envy, the podcast that still thinks digital watches are a pretty neat idea. I'm Mark Steadman, and every week I bring on a guest, and together we collaborate to build a top five list on a topic they choose. This week, my guest is Ashley Hamer, and together we are building our top five list of real inventions inspired by sci-fi.
I am moderately a gadget fan. I'm a fan. I'm not necessarily a collector. I think I do wait until things seem good before they, like, I'm not an early adopter or anything. I mean, unless, you know, I think I was a pretty early adopter of like ChatGPT and things like that. Things that don't, you know, you don't have to shell out $700 to be the first one to try it and realize it's bad. But yeah.
I have this with a few things, and ChatGPT was one of them where I was like, everyone was talking about it, and I have some weird, like, defiant, like, oppositional defiance disorder or something that's, I'm like, no, I'm not interested. Everybody's talking about it. And then after a while, I'm like, okay, I'll have a play. And then suddenly I'm using it all the time. But I don't know why, like, people will talk about a thing for ages, and then I'll actually go, okay, then I guess I'll have a look.
Oh, no, absolutely. I think that's a little bit healthy, because there are so many things being talked about on the internet that sometimes it's good to be like, no, this thing is something I'm not going to pay attention to. And then, you know, you can change your mind later.
You can't be the, you know, the person who signs up, puts their username into every single social network.
Right, right.
Because then you end up on Peach.
Peach? I've never even heard of that.
Oh, yeah, that was a thing for like, I feel like it was back in 2016, no, maybe a little bit later, maybe 2018 or something. And it was there for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, was this when Mastodon was first coming up and people were just, everybody was looking for an alternative to Twitter. I know I joined Elo at that point. I think I still have an account on Elo.
So there was a sketch show here in the UK back in the 80s called Not the 9 o'clock News. And they did an interview with a gorilla who'd been quote unquote rescued from the wild. And he'd been domesticated so much so that he's played by Rowan Atkinson, and he speaks fluent English, and he's become quite posh and sort of intolerable. And they adopted the collective noun of a flange of gorillas, which they just made up. But because I guess biologists are nerds, and nerds, like, you know, they have senses of humor, that has now become an accepted term for a group of gorillas. You can now call them a flange because of a sketch show in the UK.
I love that. Yeah, no, honestly, the one option for this show was, I think you might have suggested, like, names for species based on pop culture or something.
And yes,
that is all, like, the reason I didn't want to choose that one is because there are so many, there are too many. It's just out there. They just, biologists are constantly doing that.
We have this idea that everything has to be serious and the grown-ups are in charge. And it's like, no, the grown-ups were, you know, 20 something, and they watched stupid TV shows, and they had senses of humor, and things stuck with them. And yeah, you know, and they like, nerds like things, and they use what they like. We are talking about our real inventions that are inspired by sci-fi. What is your number one pick?
Okay, my number one pick. I think it's got to be autonomous cars.
Oh, cool.
So this one doesn't have a direct connection to, like, the inventor, because there are many inventors of autonomous cars. You know, it's been a long development, but they've been depicted in so many sci-fi novels and shows and movies that I thought it would be fun to just, like, kind of do a little retrospective on, like, how many times they've happened. So the first time that an autonomous car ever appeared in anything was in 1930. It was a book by Miles J. Ruhr called Paradise and Iron. And it's this mysterious island owned by a wealthy inventor, and all of the vehicles on this island are self-driving, and they can follow routes if you give them a map, because they didn't have GPS at the time. they can call for help if they run into an obstacle, and yeah, so that was the first time. And then Isaac Asimov wrote a short story called Sally, which I really want to read. I had never heard of this before, but it's about a farm for retired self-driving cars. So the self-driving cars are intelligent, and a retired chauffeur is actually taking care of all of these retired self-driving cars, which sounds lovely. But apparently there's a dark twist to it, so I'm excited to read it. Then Arthur C. Clarke in 1975 wrote Imperial Earth, which depicts a future where it's illegal to not use self-driving cars on the highway, probably a future that we're going to see someday. And then Knight Rider, of course, Knight Rider.
Of course.
In the 80s, Kit is the autonomous car, and Kit and David Hasselhoff, I don't know what his character's name was, but they, you know, got into many hijinks. And then Total Recall, which I saw recently,
yes,
has autonomous taxis, but they're really stupid. It's like this little Johnny Cab that's like a little robot guy in the driver's seat. And he barely understands any of the commands that you give him. And Arnold Schwarzenegger ends up ripping one out of the driver's seat and driving the car himself.
That feels more like the likelihood that we have now.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I have a real soft spot in my heart for when sci-fi authors can understand the slight shittiness of tech and the fact that, you know, because so many are sort of, they go for the bright and gleaming kind of view of the world and everything's chrome and lovely. But one thing I loved about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy very early on is Douglas Adams. He was talking then, I guess it would have been about IBM, but when I discovered it, you know, in the sort of mid to late 90s, it felt exactly like Microsoft. And he perfectly encapsulated that, just like, it's nearly there, but it's just a bit shit.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that, you know, in the same way, in a sense that, like, everything in the Star Wars universe in the first three episodes is covered in dirt and sand.
Yes.
You know, everything's got that. You know, that's, we need more of that, the realization that, like, everything is just a little bit crap, and that's good.
Yeah, Firefly too. That just makes me think of Firefly. Yeah. Like, you know, everything's rusted and busted, but it's like very futuristic. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, love it. That's a great pick. My number one, I've gone perhaps a little bit route one, but I've gone for the World Wide Web.
Nice.
So Tim Berners-Lee apparently read an Arthur C. Clarke short story from Playboy as a younger boy.
Hey, it's got great articles.
Yeah, exactly. I just read it for the crosswords.
Yeah.
It's apparently about a bunch of telephones that start talking to each other in code. I didn't note down when this came out, but it's, you know, they start pranking housewives and then they start pranking businessmen, and then eventually they form a network that brings down humanity. And it was apparently that gave Berners-Lee the idea to create his own network.
He's like, oh, they took down humanity. Let's do that.
Let's do that. Yay! Great.
And that's what he's done.
That one feels like this world's equivalent of a backronym. Like, I don't know. That feels a little bit spurious. Like, I don't know if you're going to read a dystopian thing and necessarily connect it in that way. But, you know, I'll go for it. It's a good origin story.
Yeah. I like it. That's great.
And the web's kind of important. What is your number two?
Number two, I think, is Atomic Bombs. It has a similar origin story, although it was a whole team, but the person who first discovered artificial radioactivity, it actually says that he got the idea from H.G. Wells. So the book is The World Set Free. It was H.G. Wells, 1913. And that depicts, like, literally the discovery of artificial radioactivity followed by the release of atomic energy on an industrial scale, so like nuclear power plants, then the development of the atomic bomb, and then a world war where a bunch of major cities are destroyed. And Leo Szilard, it's like a Polish name, I'm not sure, he read that book before he ever worked in nuclear physics. And in 1933, it inspired him to solve the problem of creating a nuclear chain reaction. And he literally said, I like read a letter that he wrote. He literally said, H.G. Wells, here we come, when he did it. So it's like the direct connection. But the coolest thing about this is that in the book, the discovery of radioactivity happened in 1933. This book was written in 1913, right? That is literally when it happened in real life too, which is so cool.
Wow, that is, gosh, there you go. Well, that, I mean, you've laid it out perfectly. I love it. Okay. My number two, I'm going to go with the mobile phone. The Star Trek communicator. Originally wrist mounted in the original motion pictures, and then they started putting them on people's badges. And I started getting into, because it was never clear to me what the speaker system was, but apparently, according to Reddit anyway, they were never meant for private communication, so everybody would hear, I guess, a voice from your badge.
Oh, all right.
Which, because it never felt like, I'm trying to like remember back to some TNG episodes when they used to, you know, tap the badge and just talk. It never sounded like it was coming from a particularly tinny speaker. It always kind of just sounded like it was kind of just there, a bit like the computer voice. You know, the computer voice just seemed to come from anywhere, I guess. But, yeah.
This is actually on my list too, and one of the websites that I found talking about it pointed to an actual original Star Trek with Captain Kirk, where he's like, there was a YouTube clip of him actually pulling out something that looks a lot like a phone. He like flips it open and he talks into it.
And there was an early app in 2010 that was called Star Trek Communicator, I believe, and it had all the same sort of designs as one of those. And I suspect there's probably a tricorder one as well.
Yeah, there was actually, that is something I remember, is there was a tricorder challenge. There was someone, you know, with all of these like technology challenges where they like, we'll give you $1 million if you can invent this thing. And they tried to invent the tricorder. I don't think anyone ever succeeded though.
We'll get there. Come on, science, you can do it. I believe in you. What is your number three?
So my number three is closely related. Video calls.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So this is another one that's just like, there's no direct connection, but there it's been in tons and tons of sci-fi, and then people have just wanted to do it. So the first depiction was actually in 1879, which is wild. It was a cartoon, so I don't know if that counts as sci-fi, but it was a cartoon in a newspaper where someone envisions that like in the future Thomas Edison will create this electric camera obscura that you can put on the wall and you can talk to loved ones through it. And so it's this depiction of like a mom and dad talking to their kids on the beach while they're sitting in their living room, which is, you know, exactly video calling. And then good old Jules Verne in 1889, 1 year or 10 years later, he writes a story called In the Year 2998, where he imagines that there'll be these wires in the future that can transmit images through sensitive mirrors. So like actual reflections of your face through the wires and then go to some distant receiver, which is super cool. And then there is, I had never heard of this author, but Hugo Gernsback. Have you heard of him?
I have not.
So he's massive. He's what the Hugo Awards are named after.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay,
he actually
sure.
coined the term science fiction, which I had no idea. But he has a book where a super, almost like superhuman scientist gets a video call on his telephone. Instead of video phone, they switch it. And so it's a weird
sure.
word. And a beautiful woman who's about to be trapped by an avalanche and 4,000 miles away, which is like this huge feat that this video has gone this far. And he goes and saves her and, you know, romance ensues.
Naturally.
And apparently in that book, I'm just going on. I'm sorry. This is like a super long one, but
I'm loving it.
In that book, he predicted a zillion different things that we have today. He predicted video conferencing, but also social networking, electric cars, radar, solar power, and microfilm. So understandably, he's a legend, I guess. Yeah.
He's the equivalent of the Simpsons.
Yeah, right. but then, of course, there's the Jetsons. That's the one I remember. That's the one that's
deep in
my subconscious. They, you know, where his George Jetson's boss would always call, Jetson!
Yes.
And then there's also a video call in 2001, A Space Odyssey. And then there's also a video call in Back to the Future Part 2, which honestly I think is one of the better Back to the Futures. But yeah, someone gets fired over a video phone. Yeah. So the first video phone, this is the thing I didn't realize it was this old. The first two-way video communication system was invented in 1959.
Wow.
It was called the picture phone. Yeah. And we had various prototypes like that throughout the next decades. So it's actually not as new as I thought.
I remember there was a kids show in the UK called How To, How and then the number two. And it was a sort of a science kind of, yeah, kind of current affairs, kind of science-y show for kids. And I remember them talking about video calling. And this would have been about 92, maybe 92, 94. And they were trying to explain actually how a video call would work. And they were trying to explain the concept of compression. And they used it by taking loads of books and just laying loads of books on the screen. And then just taking random books out. And that's what they, that's their definition of compression.
All right.
And that's how you would be able to push a video signal over the telephone line, which reminds me, there is a lovely line in, again, a big kids show here in the UK ran for many years called Blue Peter. And they would occasionally do some science things. And it was wonderful. There are some clips that surface on TikTok of these sort of early demonstrations of mobile phones and the internet. And you're just watching these lovely, mild-mannered, absolute nerds just going, and now I'm going to unplug the telephone cable from, and of course everything's got very formal names, you know, the telecom cable from the British Telecom connector, and I'm going to take this end of the cable and plug it into the modem here. I've switched the modem on, and now I can talk in, I can't remember what the system was that they used back in the early 90s. It might come to me. Freetel or something like that. And and it's just, it's so just lovely, and you know, everyone's wide-eyed and interested, and it's just, it's very slow and it's very deliberate, but you know, man, the future.
I love it too. That's great.
My number three then, I'm going with the helicopter.
Nice.
Robur the Conqueror by Jules Verne, otherwise known as Clipper of the Clouds, was published in 1886, and is the short story, or a story of lighter-than-air travel, and it posited that that would be the way that we would travel, because heavier-than-air travel would not be feasible, which... When I think about it, I don't know much. It's not a story I've read, but it feels very BioShock Infinite. Mm. I don't know if you ever played that particular game. It's really got that sense of, you know, the possibilities of tomorrow, the future is today.
Yes,
let's all take to the clouds. And I like, it's just, it sounds great. It sounds like a good way to go. And so yes, it feels very right that Jules Verne should be the person that could that would come up with the helicopter. So that's, I find that quite nice.
I think that, you know, there's another timeline where we're all riding around in blimps. I think that lighter than air travel was a great idea, but then...
Why? Thank you. Why is it that so many alternate reality bits of fiction have us all in blimps?
I know.
There's so many shows, and it's like, that's the thing that differentiates. Why is it always blimps, Ashley?
I mean, I think it's logical. I think that the exact kind of like retro future that you're talking about, they were thinking everybody was going to be in blimps. And then we had, the humanity, the Hindenburg. Yeah. And that was like the worst thing that had happened, you know, in that, like in recent memory. And everybody was just like, okay, no more blimps.
No more blimps.
Where
for you.
Really, like, if they just hadn't used hydrogen, they would have, like, apparently before they launched the Hindenburg, there was talk about not using hydrogen, but they did it anyway because there was tax laws. I'm vaguely remembering this story. God. There's like a whole, it's really mundane reasons that they use hydrogen. But, you know, if that hadn't happened, like, what would the future be? I think that's why.
Okay. So it really does come down to that one decision, that sort of sliding doors moment of, what gas do we put in this thing?
Yeah.
Oh, let's do that because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
And we get a tax break on it. Oh, gosh. But yeah, I've got a real soft spot in my heart for that sort of, that lovely, gleaming, optimistic sort of 1950s view, you know, view of the future as well. That's, you know, Bioshock did that kind of thing very well as well. It's just like, yeah, and I want to just talk in this voice all the time, you know, optimism.
Totally. I mean, I'm currently watching Fallout on, which is great, but they have a similar thing. They have a similar, like, kind of retro future thing going.
Love it. What is your number four then? Or your next one down the list?
So my, yes, my, this is my last one because I also had cell phones, but credit cards.
Aha!
Yeah. So apparently this was first conceived in a book in 1888 by Edward Bellamy called Looking Backward. And he predicted a card that allows people to borrow money from a central bank on credit, which eliminated the need for physical money. So, except it was made out of cardboard and you would snip out a little bit of the cardboard every time you used it. So like a punch card, I guess. And get this, even women could use it. Whoa, that was like a big part of it. They're like, oh, women can also use this. and 1888. Well, I mean, 1888, women couldn't get their credit cards not in their husband's name until the 1970s. So it's been a while. But yeah, so the first credit card was actually invented in 1950, the Diner's Club card, which is basically just you could eat at a number of different restaurants on credit and then pay your bill at the end of the month. And then a bunch of financial institutions were like, hey, that's a good idea. And then the rest is history.
So, of course, now everything is chip and PIN, or I guess in most places it is.
Yeah, the US finally. I mean, it took us a really
finally
long time.
Got, yeah, it's there. Because you had the magnetic stripe for ages, and in my school, in my primary school, so I would have been 10, we used to have this machine that... It was for learning phonics, and it was this giant machine, and it worked on the same principle as with a magnetic stripe. And so what you would have is you'd have these cards and you would run them across the machine and it would read out to you the word.
Oh, cool.
But because we were kids, we would occasionally press buttons we weren't supposed to press because we didn't know what we were doing. And it was very easy to record over that. So you would quite easily swipe a card that was like, you know, Badger, and then you would just hear one of the other kids from last year's class doing this, just being like, no one had realized. So you just, you know, we had no idea. I might be still saying Badger wrong, you know, all these years later. I don't know. But yeah, whenever I think about those magnetic stripes, I always think about, and you could go, because, you know, it was analog, you could go at your own speed. So you could really like Badger and go backwards and stuff. And it was, yeah, it was
that's
fun.
Sounds delightful.
Our school, like, it doesn't exist anymore. It got knocked down. And they lost funding. And as I say that, I'm not surprised they lost funding because they spent loads. It was a tiny school, by the way. There were 30 kids in the entire school. They got so much gadgets. They had so many gadgets.
Oh.
Do you remember Logo? Was that ever a language that you learned?
I don't know.
It was like I don't know what its purpose was, but you always had a turtle. It was always a turtle. And you would move the turtle by having these commands. You could draw shapes and stuff, and it was like maths and programming, and it was horrible. And yeah, you'd have these really obscure commands, and you could do it on your computer, and you could just draw things on your computer. But they actually had a big plastic Logo turtle where you would input your commands, and you would watch it on the floor go and do stuff. 30 kids in my school. It was not a rich school.
Yeah.
And yet we had all these weird gadgets.
There's like some principal or someone who just really loves this stuff.
Mad into technology. Or just knew exactly where all the different pots of funding were.
Yep.
It was just like, yeah, okay. Yep. I'm going to apply for that. we had touchscreen computers in the 1980s.
Wow. I didn't even know this existed. Amazing.
No, I know. It was so weird. Like when the touch screens came out on the iPhones. I mean, there was nowhere near what it was like, what it's like now. Because you really had to like properly jab your meat finger into it. And you know, there was no pinching and stuff. But I mean, yeah, we had those. We had speech synthesizers that would sound like they had indigestion. we don't know why, but every now and again, just unbidden, the machine would just, because we had these giant big speakers and the machine would just start going, just for like ages, for minutes on end. Very strange, but what a world. What a world. Maybe that's where I get my love of gadgetry from.
Yeah.
Okay, so I had credit cards as my number four. So I will move us on to mechanical limbs.
Nice.
Otherwise known as the Waldo, which was a short story by Robert Heinlein. Nope, that's definitely not how you're pronouncing the name. But it was published in 1942, and it is this is now an acceptable term for a mechanical limb, a Waldo, otherwise known as a mechanical agent such as a gripper arm controlled by a human limb. It was a story about, I think it was like a Dr. Waldo who makes his own mechanical limbs.
That's really cool. I actually happen to know a lot about prosthetic limbs because I was in a band with two neuroscientists in Chicago, back when I was in Chicago. And
the coolest already, go on.
Yeah, one of them, Sleeman Vince Maya, actually helped develop a limb that can feel touch, which is super important because to accurately grip things, to use the right amount of pressure and stuff, you actually have to be able to feel the thing. And he was able, like, President Obama, like, fist bumped someone wearing one of his prosthetics, like, in a demonstration. Like, it was so cool. So I love that stuff. It's great.
Huge thanks to Ashley Hamer for joining me on this episode. Of course, we'll get back to our list shortly, and you can hear Ashley on her own podcast, Taboo Science. She also is doing a bit of a guest run on another podcast that I enjoy called Lateral with Tom Scott. If you like lateral thinking puzzles and banter, then you might enjoy that. I said banter in a slightly insincere way there just because it's a bit of an insincere word, but it's a funny show. It's good. And there are lots of that particular episode is like a trifecta of people that are very much in my wheelhouse. And also, maybe possibly, if I play my cards right, be another guest who's on that run of episodes. Anyway, we're not talking about Lateral. We're talking about, actually, a quick point on Lateral. I reviewed it in my newsletter a good while back. I have a weekly newsletter called The Big Minute, where I talk about a week or a minute of podcast audio and tell you why I think it's good. And I reviewed one of the very first, if not the first episode of Lateral for that newsletter. If that is of interest to you, thebigminute.com is where you can go and find that. So getting back to List Envy then, next week we are talking about new ways to enjoy a new city while traveling. That heralds the return of Ariel Nissenblatt. So very pleased to be bringing that back. And then we've got top five androids from sci-fi movies with Aisha Khan, Bond gadgets with Valerie Paris. It's all coming up and lots more besides. So if you are not already following the podcast, then I urge you to do so. ListEnvyPod.com. I've got all the domains you could ever need. ListEnvyPod.com to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, because it's a good show we got here. Let us get back into it. I think most things are proven to be good when you tell people that they're good. Is that what social proof is? Anyway, let us get back into this episode where we have got a very important job to do. We've got to finish building our combined top five list of real inventions inspired by sci-fi. I think I like the fact that we've got a couple of overlaps here. I think that works well in our favour. I've taken a stab at a preliminary top five. Let me know how this hits you. If we go from five to one, I've got credit cards, video calling, the mobile phone, the web, and then autonomous cars.
I like it.
Oh, all right. Excellent. This is efficient work. This is what happens when you bring a scientist on. It's just like, get it done, sorted. As per regulations of the show, I will ask you formally then, Ashley Hamer, do you consent to this list?
I consent to this list.
On my list, I think I had one more, as by way of honorable mention, which was the Metaverse, which has its origins in Snow Crash, another book that I've not read, but 1992, story by Neil Shepherdson, Neil Stephenson. It also brought us the term avatar, and inspired the makers of Google Maps or Google Earth, as well as, of course, the idea of the Metaverse as well, which is now becoming a whole... Actually, we don't... It was all Metaverse for a short amount of time, wasn't it? It was Web3 and Metaverse about... It feels like 2 years ago, and now it's all AI, and now everybody's gone to AI. It feels like it was crypto, metaverse, NFTs for quite a while, and then everybody's gone to AI. But yeah, I don't know. I'm sure the metaverse, there must still be some people working on it. I mean, Meta did rename themselves.
I feel like that era, the crypto, NFTs, metaverse, we were all just like, okay, this is technology, like looking for a purpose. Like, what's the purpose? And then finally AI came along and we're like, oh, this is something that solves a bunch of stuff. Like, let's grab onto that. And then everything else was forgotten.
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully fewer scams involved. Although yes. I did... I reported my first ever ad to YouTube yesterday. It was just like an ad for a solar panel company, apparently based in the UK or offering services in the UK, but they were using an AI clone of Donald Trump's voice.
No good.
And I'm just like, you can't do that, right? That's not a thing you're allowed to do.
Yikes.
It's a very recognizable voice.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a very pleasant diversion, actually. Please, would you tell me about Taboo Science?
Yeah. So Taboo Science examines taboos through a scientific lens. So everything from cannibalism to obesity to nudity.
the link of the two.
Cover all that. And then this season... We're doing a mini series that's like very, very taboo, looking into kinks and fetishes and like why people are into these things and what the science is behind them. And it's actually super interesting and I'm having a great time, even though many times it makes me blush.
Yes. I shouldn't know these kinds of things at all. Where can we find it?
So it's at tabooscience.show or wherever you get your podcasts.
Superb. And you do many other things besides. So where can our listener keep up with you and all your other fine work?
Yeah. So I also do, if there are any podcasters listening, which I'm sure there are, you have a podcaster network. I do a newsletter called The Weekly Tweak where you can, week by week, it gives you one tip to improve your show over time. And then generally, I am on Threads and Twitter at Smashley Hamer.
That's one of my favorite. Sorry, I'll let you complete that.
No, it's fine. It's like it's SM and then my name. That's all.
It's one of my favorite handles. It makes me smile every time. And I forgot that the weekly tweet was yours because I read that as well. And I forgot that was you as well. I think in my head, the Ashley that I knew worked for Descript was also the Ashley that I knew wrote the weekly tweet, but I did not also connect you with.
Yeah, no, I have many lives.
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, we've all got to be multi-hyphenates in this world.
Yes, we do.
Well, I mean, all that remains for me to say is yes, thank you for joining me on List Envy. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate it. It was super fun.